we'll go ahead and look at Essex Junction's experience. Jim Jutras, are you on?
Yes, I am, Ned.
Excellent. We can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay, we've had the fortunate or unfortunate experience to have two generations of CHP. The very first one was a design build because the technology at the time was evolving very, very quickly. And it's a good thing we did a design build based on performance and gas volume available, because about that time is when literature started coming out about siloxane media and its effect on engines and turbines. So we ended up having the good fortune of a very local vendor as well, right out of Vermont, that had experience throughout the world with remote isolated power systems. Unfortunately, they're not in the business of doing that anymore. So anyway, things have changed a little bit, and I'm going to discuss that a little bit. I'm not sure if I can move to the next slide or not, Ned. Okay. We had started out with microturbines, had very good success with them operationally. Our gas is pretty decent quality. It's about 35% CO2, meaning essentially the balance is methane. Very low moisture, low H2S because we are part of a basin that requires phosphorus removal. We use a two-point chemical feed that includes a ferrous chloride solution, and the ferrous chloride in turn ends up becoming our iron sponge. So that latent chemical effect of having, use ferrous chloride to capture and precipitate phosphorus has a huge benefit in the anaerobic digester. For us, we're below 30 parts per million H2S on any given time, and we have no iron sponge need for pretreatment for the gas. You might ask why we got rid of the microturbines. Well, we went through a 25-year rehabilitation recently, and in the design phase, we ended up including the digester process complex as part of the evaluation and then ultimately the work that was completed here. About that time, we were trying to get a core replacement from the microturbine manufacturer. And three times we let a PO, three times the company that represented them for retrofitting the cores changed. We then heard through the grapevine that the C30s that we had were going to become a legacy product, meaning they're no longer manufactured and supported for a period of time, but no definite answer to that. In doing the cost value benefit of maintaining the microturbines versus looking at the construction costs for the facility itself, the value of that building space where the microturbines were located was just phenomenal compared to, you know, the maintenance and life cycle costs that we're experiencing. So because we had already received our return on the investment, they have been up and running for over 7 years. We not just benchmarked it, but we checked the numbers, and we had definitely returned made our money back. We just made a decision at that time, okay, let's use the room for the new motor control center for the digester, and we'll deal with the CHP after we're done. Okay, next slide. When we got done with the construction project, we did have the money we budgeted available to go ahead and do another performance-based solicitation. We also did our bid early on and the current one based on the gas availability and strictly that. We didn't get into anything about sizing it for the facility or otherwise. The solicitation was based on performance and the amount of power produced, the heat produced, the total maintenance life cycle, including oil change, major maintenance, and other things. And we used the information provided by those manufacturers to do the life cycle cost comparison and the return on investment calculations. And our sensitivity on that was about 8 years return on investment. We go ahead and proceed with the project. And we did it based on 100 kW unit. But we, in the process, we made a change and upsized to 150 kW unit. We did that because the cost differential was about $20,000 on an $800,000 project. So we said, why not? Let's just, we'll be growing into it over time. Let's just go for the larger unit. Okay, next slide. Okay, here you can see on the right the microturbine installation. It's very, very small, very clean. The one on the left is our current generator. It's a 2G manufactured brand. Everything is self-contained there. I didn't show a picture of the outside, but there is moisture condensation as well as gas reheating and siloxane media vessels. So everything self-contained. It was bid as part of that package. And that was basically drop it in place and plumb it in to the 3 gas supply line and the 2 heat return and supply lines as well. Very similar in installation. We had excellent service runs out of the microturbines. A typical core is 30,000 hours. We were up to 45 and 50,000 hours on both units because we couldn't get cores. We're now on a reciprocating engine with the same gas quality and finding that sometimes with the less expensive systems, you have higher periodic maintenance costs. And we're working to optimize those right now. It's been running over a year and a half, and we are optimizing those. We're optimizing the heat exchange, but the system has been running. It's been pretty robust. We had some problems at startup, and a lot of them were due to interconnect and utility questions that weren't necessarily answered right or answered in a timely manner. But outside of that, once we got through all of that and got the unit up and running, you know, life was pretty good. Next slide. Okay. Again, I had mentioned this before. We do look at the I do want to go back on one thing related to the previous slide. Excuse me. We did, on the microturbines, have fuel blending. We had the capability to run on natural gas and methane. And we used that on digester startup and on certain days where it was beneficial to be heating and generating power as opposed to just heating using natural gas. The other thing that we required as part of both of these projects that we had was local service. We didn't want to be flying people in from Florida, California, or Europe every time we needed service on this stuff. So we required something within a certain radius as part of the specification. And we're sticking to that because occasionally we'll have a service guy that's got to come from Florida or California, and that really raises hell with your life cycle costs when you're at a small facility. Okay, next slide. When we look at the full asset utilization, we always ran our process first, and then with whatever we had for available hydraulic or organic capacity, we brought in external waste. That way we could run the unit at full capacity, run the digester at full capacity, again, considering costs of total cost, meaning sludge generation and everything else. We started specializing in some very high-strength waste that had little solids generation capability, but tremendous carbon capability, generated methane like crazy. The problem we're discovering right now ties back to the fact that we're in a TMDL for phosphorus. We're looking at a 0.2 discharge permit requirement at the facility here. We've been at 0.8 since the 1980s. Now we're going down to 0.2 since this last facility improvement we went through, and we're finding some of these high-strength wastes are loaded, and I mean loaded, with soluble phosphorus. Some of the material we're receiving in, you know, 5-10 parts per million, that stuff is great. We're getting some material diverted, but from cow power or farm-based CHP systems. 6,000-gallon loads of either food processing or dairy waste that are in a 500 to 800 milligram per liter soluble phosphorus for the stuff coming in. And that, coupled with our side stream of dewatering, returning that material back to the process for treatment, has limited us in our capability to meet that future permit requirement. So what we're doing is looking at those issues now as far as our policy of receiving in wastes from the outside and using them to maximize the return on investment for this piece of equipment. But the bottom line for us, we did the ROI. We're going to certainly go back and check it and check performance. Our return on investment, we had money from Efficiency Vermont, which is a nonprofit utility up here that basically will help support some of these projects to move ahead financially. We received about 10% of the total capital cost as an investment from them. What we did not get to keep were the renewable energy credits or any of the extraneous costs. Our return on investment is based on the utility rate of 9.5 cents per kilowatt hour. And it's based on that because there's no utility incentives for being online for any period of time. When we see some other presentations, they talk about a blended cost with all your demand charges and everything included as part of that KW. We don't look at it that way because our demand charges don't change whether this unit's online or off. We found that as you shut it down, even just for periodic maintenance, you're offline for more than 15 minutes, those demand charges hit. And we felt it was much better to look at the KW cost and return on investment from that standpoint, coupled with the maintenance and other aspects that are inherent anytime you purchase this kind of system. They're complicated, they take work, but what you want to make sure you do is you buy it smartly, that meets your facility needs, and address that as best you can in the specification, whether it's through research beforehand or shift the burden to the manufacturers and suppliers of these systems. We did end up with a reciprocating engine because that's what was bid. Nobody put in bids for microturbines. These bids were solicited from multiple vendors, very few responses. And it could be just because of the time that it was released. It was a busy time for everybody, and I think an awful lot had to do with the general size of this facility. We're really small, and we were looking for containerized systems because our return on investment, containerized or small systems that could stand alone, our return on investment went out the window when we had to build a physical structure around them. So, again, that helped shape how we designed this project from the get-go. So with that, I think I'm pretty much wrapped up. Any questions, or we're ready for Mac to take his section.
Hey, Jim, what brand of engine did you end up with?
We ended up with a 2G.
Thank you.
What size were they again?
It's a 150 kW. Again, we're a small facility, 3.3 MGD. Our current demand is about a 150 kW during the day with peaks and valleys, and we follow the load, so, you know, it ranges between 80 and 150 kW for output, depending upon gas availability.
And you've got about a year and a half of run hours, you said?
Yeah, a little bit more than that, but yeah.
And haven't had a top-end overhaul yet?
No, we have not. We just had a turbocharger replacement and a few other things, but you know, outside of that, we have not had major replacement. They borescope the cylinders just about every time. We don't have issues with siloxane. We do watch the media very carefully. We did with our other system, where we found that actually with a reciprocating engine, we save money from that analysis because we're not using gas analysis anymore. We can pick up the silica in the oil as part
of the oil,
periodic. Yeah, so it's saving us a boatload of money on gas analysis.
Yeah.
What was the reason why you had to replace the turbocharger?
It's just life cycle costs. It's a life cycle plan. They have these different service levels. And it's an excellent question because our service level is not for 24/7 run like a prime mover is. They had us replacing the starter at like a certain number of hours just because that's what they do. We don't do that. We had a starter on the shelf. If it fails, we can switch it out. Three bolts and two cables and you're done. So our needs are a little bit different. If you're running 24/7 as a prime mover and you need uptime, those service cycles are based on that. So we're beginning to question that a little bit and see what we can do to extend some of those major service intervals.
And what is your service arrangement with 2G or is it with somebody else? You mentioned that they had you change themselves, so you must have some kind of maintenance agreement with them.
We opted not to do the maintenance agreement. And we are working with them, but not under a contract. We let them know when we're coming up for service, or they monitor it based on their remote access capability. They also have some other service partners that they're also approving use of. So, you know, we're beginning to look at that. And one thing we're looking to do, because we're small and there are several 2G installations around here, you may have heard of Vermont Tech having a digester up in Randolph, Vermont. There's another one at the Benjamin Farm up near the Canadian border. We're now beginning to have discussions about using one of their service partners and coordinating it so we can all save on travel and lodging. That way we can get on a regular life maintenance cycle with these folks. And the parts and labor isn't too much. It really comes down to when you're paying an awful lot for travel and other things. It kind of starts eating into the profit, so to speak.
Where's 2G out of?
They're out of Florida, but they have a service guy out of Manchester, New Hampshire now. And some of the service partners, there's another one out towards Niagara. They have several in Pennsylvania area. So, you know, they've got a very good, solid presence throughout the region. Caterpillar and some other manufacturers and, you know, people that are partners with Caterpillar, Waukesha, nobody submitted on this package. We only had one other reciprocating engine bid, and it was a hybrid.
Oh, man didn't submit?
Excuse me?
You didn't get a submission from man?
Well, this is a man engine that 2G uses. That's probably why we didn't get one from them.
Okay.